From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on a Bishop's Hour. We survived our little bout with winter in the last few days, and looks like it's back to summer. Appreciate you all being with us as things are starting to open up with this pandemic, and we'll keep you posted on when and if, when and if, not if, but when the diocese makes all of its announcements about all of getting back to Mass and et cetera, and which we're all anxious for, but we can continue to watch it online, and it's been a really meaningful and powerful experience for our family, and hope it has been for your family as well. Well, we're pleased to go up to the great city of Paradise, and we're joined by Greg Kidder, who is the parish steward there at St. Thomas More Church in Paradise. Greg, good day to you.
Good day to you. Thank you for the call.
Oh, we appreciate you taking the time. I can imagine things are pretty busy in Paradise, even with the pandemic.
You know, something it's interesting is it's kind of quiet. I was really surprised that we had geared up for us to stay open as well as minister to people. We have a St. Vincent de Paul, a local St. Vincent de Paul here, as well as the diocesan representatives here as well.
Mm-hmm.
And with the pandemic, we were geared up for an onslaught, but it's been pretty quiet.
Greg, you're a parish steward. What is a parish steward, and what, you know, and talk about your duties, you know, prior to the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've worked for St. Thomas More Catholic Church in Paradise for about 23 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been here, and I was originally hired on as the plant manager, and I've served under seven priests during that time. But when the fire broke out, we found ourselves, just really displaced. And it took a toll on all of our parishioners. But I developed a plan, and the bishop approved that plan. And we set in motion to keep our community alive.
So this... I remember the day of the fire, and is it November, and which is surprising to a lot of us.
Right.
Seems like we're beyond fire season. Mm-hmm. Most of us, many people have never been to Paradise. I've been there a time or two. A beautiful city. I didn't realize it had quite the population that it did. I thought it was a little bit smaller than that. But I remember I live in Davis, and I was heading up towards Woodland and saw all this smoke in the sky and thought, oh, somebody's burning a rice field or something, the rice stubble like what they used to do. And about an hour later, somebody said to me, did you hear about Paradise? And I said, what? And they said, it's gone. And I thought, oh, no way. I'm sure that it was a tragic fire, but I had no idea. Describe that day, if you would.
Certainly. The day of the fire, it was unusually, that we saw a fire early on about 7:30, I noticed it, but we heard it was in Pulgan. We've had fires here before, and they've always mm-hmm. blocked it before it got to the town, and it would go up the canyon, and then the airtakers would take care of it. But this particular day, it was an unusual cloud of smoke coming, and we didn't. We got our evacuation order at 8:20, and our Mass begins at 8:00. So
mm-hmm.
we.
What day of the week was it?
It was a Thursday.
A Thursday, okay.
Yes, it was a Thursday. School had already started. The students had, because we have a charter school here on mm-hmm. premise, and so we had 223 students plus faculty that had begun, their school day. And then as, you know, the evacuation warning came through, you can start seeing embers starting to fall in the parking lot.
Wow.
And that was when we knew it's not a warning. We just need to get out of here.
Have you had you ever had an evacuation order before?
We've had pieces of evacuations. In 2008, it came up from the south, from Chico area that burned just to the edge of town. There again, they stopped it before it got to the main part of town. Mm-hmm. We did lose some buildings then.
So, was it a particularly windy day?
Yeah, that's the thing. That it was dry, it was warm, and then it was unusually windy that day.
Mm-hmm.
And they clocked some pretty high winds in the canyon, which was normal, but it was also windy here in Paradise.
Now, the canyon would be east of you?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And so that morning it was just the right conditions, and then once it started burning that much fuel, it created its own wind. It was
sure.
The fire department described it as a blowtorch almost effect.
I remember hearing that in the car fire in Redding, that it created actually referred to it as a tornado of some kind. You know,
exactly. And then as an aftermath, you can see where you'd have an old shack that survived the fire, and some brand new homes that were totally destroyed all the way around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exactly it. You see that footprint today. But it was interesting. The folks, as we all evacuated that day, everybody went to the camps and stuff like that. And people thought, well, within a week they'll be able to get back up to their home.
Right.
And not realizing the severity, so it took time for that to sink in, that we weren't going to be coming back immediately.
So, what percent of the homes and then the downtown, the businesses, the schools were actually destroyed, or became uninhabitable at least?
Right. We lost. I believe it was 14,000 structures.
Wow.
And so it took most of the area. Now it's interesting. Our downtown area, about 50% of it survived. The high school survived, but the junior high was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Damaged some of the other elementary schools.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, it had come from the east to. And they actually, the fire department stopped the fire here at St. Thomas More before it was able to get to further downtown buildings, which
mm-hmm.
survived. Our sanctuary was spared, as well as our school buildings. But we did lose our parish hall, rectory, and youth center.
Mm-hmm.
So but they were battling it right here on premise.
Wow. So I mean, I can't imagine they knew where to start or where to go or what to battle first.
Yes, well, early on it was just about evacuating people,
mm-hmm.
and once they knew the line couldn't be held at the edge of town, they just fell back and started protecting certain areas, and then when that became not a reality. They just consolidated into large centers. So several of the churches were destroyed, but there were several churches that survived, as well as the high school and public safety, the police department, fire department, things like that.
So if somebody had been on the church grounds and for whatever reason unable to evacuate, they probably would have survived it.
Well, not
necessarily.
Yes, no.
Too much smoke?
Because the smoke. I think the smoke was in inhalation. And that was one of the reasons why I stayed behind, simply because people were coming to the church to thinking that this would be a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And I just informed them, please do not. We can't protect you here. You need to keep going. And so once we evacuated everyone off the premise, it was just a matter of locking things up and shutting things down. And preparing for my own evacuation later in that day. But then as the police and fire started consolidating the area, I knew it was safe for me to leave because they would take care of any stragglers.
Did of those homes that survived, did people stay in their homes? Or I mean, were they able to come back, or did the whole town get evacuated eventually?
Well, we had a very, very persistent parishioner. he spent overnight. The family was quite distraught because they could not find him, and we could not report as to his whereabouts. And it took us probably close to 4 or 5 days to find out if he did stay in his home.
Wow.
And the fire department insisted that he would leave, but they can't make you leave.
Right.
And so as long as he was on his property. So they'd drop a water bottle off of him. Hopefully he would get hungry enough to leave. But he stuck it out. He was he's close to his 80s.
Wow.
But it was so there were people that did stay. There were people that continued that were also part of different services that volunteer services that that stayed to help the fire department and be supportive to them.
So at some point, I'm sure all sorts of relief agencies. How did that all work for Paradise? Was it chaos? Was there some order to it?
Yeah, it was chaotic that first week, and then it started. The good thing about Americans is we're planners. We have contingencies, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so even for St. Thomas More, we set up our office at the Newman Center. That week, I mean, that Thursday was the fire, and Monday we were up and running. So
at the Newman Center at Chico State?
In Chico, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very gracious to let us use their big hall area.
Yeah, it's a nice facility, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, we just took up a corner, and then there was also a lot of relief items that had come in. And we started using that as a staging area,
mm-hmm.
and started getting it out to the camps.
Mm-hmm.
We had Father Brandon McKeefrey had come up from Sacramento, and he was in the camps and directly ministering to people immediately. And him and I were in contact. He was a former pastor here.
Right. Oh, and, right.
Yeah. And he him and I just we worked together for 8 years. And we just kept in touch on cell phone.
So the camps, were they tent cities? Were there trailers? Were there what was available at the camps?
It was a combination of a lot of things. Just some people did evacuate with their trailers, so they were able to pull it into the Walmart parking lot, the neighborhood church, an empty lot, whatever they can find. And then within about 2-3 weeks. You had more organized camps. Red Cross came in and set up and things like that.
Were they mostly in the Chico area, or where were they?
Oh, they were, yes, Chico, Oroville, Gridley.
Wow.
It fanned out all the way, in various parts of Yuba City.
Wow.
People just scattered.
Yeah. And what was immediately available to the people? I mean, you've lost your house. Presumably a lot of people are insured. Some might not have been. Everybody, I presume, was unemployed at that point.
The world just stopped for us, and we just we became refugees into another town, and they were gracious to take us in. I still have toothpaste. they immediately, it was interesting. We had a deacon that was even in looking for some toothbrush or something, I think it was. And he said he went into Walmart and there was no toothbrush. He said, but he went out in the parking lot and they were handing them out.
So oh, wow.
People were actually buying up all the stock and then just distributing them.
Oh, how wonderful.
So, and then a lot of agencies and churches were handing out gift cards immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And then FEMA came in and set up at the Sears building, and they started the official process. So, you know, sorting out who was, what people's needs were, and try to handle immediate needs. Salvation Army and the Red Cross, you know, some of these outside agencies that have worked disasters before, they were really prepared for it.
So how long did you go with your church was not destroyed? How long did you go without having mass or any services there?
Well, that was the thing. The services at the church here was probably close to about 3 months.
Uh-huh.
But as I said, we set up our office immediately. We began having mass at the Newman Center.
Mm-hmm.
Bishop Soto came out the third week and had a general mass at St. John's,
right,
for the people of St. Thomas More, and it was well attended. We had a social gathering within that week as well. That Friday after the fire, we had a potluck and just a social gathering, just to see each other and mm-hmm. make that connection. And that solidified our resolve to come back. And so we negotiated with our Divine Savior in Chico to set up our office there and celebrate Mass every Sunday. So we had our St. Thomas More Mass for the parish in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was well attended. And then slowly people start moving away, and families start picking up their mothers and fathers, and
sure,
and moving them to other parts of the country.
So was there a general resolve that this is a lost cause, we're going to move someplace else, or no, we're going to go back and rebuild? What was the sense, or was there a sense?
Well, for the most part, it was confusion mm-hmm. on the part of our parishioners. For me, it was the resolve that the church survived, so we will come back. And there were homes up here of parishioners that did survive as well. Those people, my take on it was, you know, the Catholic Church needs to be here.
Right.
We need to be present. We need to be, that force of strength within our faith and be that beacon. So, we hear a lot about Butte Strong and, you know, Paradise Strong, but we as Catholics, we're Jesus Strong. We're faithful
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
So let that be what guides us. And so with that, it became a culture within our parish that we are going to survive. This is their home. And
mm-hmm.
so it once they had that sense of direction from the church, they knew, okay, everything's going to be okay. We'll still have a lot of work to do, but we will be okay.
Wow. We're speaking with Greg Kidder, parish steward for the St. Thomas More Church in Paradise, which did survive the fire. We're talking about a year and a half now, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Well, just what's the nature of the town at this point?
Well, there was 800 permits issued, and then the virus hit, kind of slowed a lot of things down.
Wow.
The permit process in there, that all the government agencies, they've kind of shifted gears and slowed everything down. Obviously, PG&E, their offices are shutting down, had shut down, and things of that nature. It's just now starting to get some momentum again. But contractors have been busy working. They, by nature, they social distance despite what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been progress, and our folks have sheltered in place and they're taking care of their yards and things of that nature. And And for myself, I've started my home rebuilding because I lost my home in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I get to move up here by August. So we've made good progress. And even for folks that had no insurance, I just talked to a couple that they were able to get the financing to bring a modular in, mm-hmm. and on their property, because they did own the property, but they didn't have insurance on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're slowly rebuilding, and you can see some joy in their life again.
Wow. Well, and the pandemic shut everybody in the state down, but Butte County has done really well in terms of very low transmission rate.
Yes, we were pretty much outside of the metropolitan areas, but the truth is, though, we didn't have any testing, so we were really we were blind as far as how much transmission exposure
you
had.
Sure.
So, but at the same token, we've had a slow tick rate up since the worst of it,
mm-hmm.
and we are getting more cases. And then, the big thing everyone asks me is, when do we open up again? Yeah, and that's a $64 question.
Boy, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then we've already set in a plan as far as what our reopening would look like. With the spacing, the hand washing stations, masks, the communion lines, all of that. We have a plan in place for that.
You do. I hear you see different states, different areas within our state, saying how many can gather once we open, and you hear this term 25, and I think the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. who's going to be the 25?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because for larger parishes, I truly feel for them. I'm devastated for them because they have a high overhead, all these things that are just problematic, the multiple masses of things of that nature.
Right.
Fortunate for Paradise, we have one mass,
mm-hmm.
and we have 150 people,
right.
That show up each week. So it's manageable for the size of our church holds 552. So
you can almost social distance just on a normal.
We're pretty close to mm-hmm. 140. We could get them 6 feet apart.
Yep.
And and obviously those who have pre-existing conditions or over 65, will not be required. So
that'd be an interesting. I remember that sometimes when I've gone to mass in a rural area and the church isn't full, and the pastor will say, "How about everybody? Like maybe you're on vacation somewhere, in a new place." And the pastor will say, "How about everybody come up a little closer here? You in the back row,
Right.
Now they're saying, let's spread out. Let's get in.
Exactly.
It's just the opposite message now.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be a challenge to restart. And, there's this big fear of, these type of gatherings are dangerous and that they are, a potential for an incubation. But at the same token, we can't be afraid forever. And we have to start taking that leap to take that next step.
So, it's a real push-pull, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I remember a month or so ago, and you were reading about a couple of funerals in rural Georgia where just so many people got it, and a choir practice up in Washington State where virtually everybody at the choir practice ended up with it. They were all in an enclosed room singing at the top of their lungs, as you do in choir, and for a couple hours, and virtually everybody got sick, and you hear those stories, and then you go, we have a lot of diseases around all the time. Everybody's afraid of the flu, or we're getting our flu shots and all that. And at some point, we hope to get it. And it looks like most people, you know, we're wearing masks, we're washing our hands, we're social distancing, and in many areas, the rates have come down dramatically.
Correct. And that's the practicality that we have to approach this, not in fear, but in realistic, practical terms. It's not going to go back to what it was.
Right.
So, but we do have to be innovative and take some calculated risk of what we can and can't do. And that's I'm sure that's what all parishes are working with. I know that for St. Thomas More we are. We take it very seriously. In Paradise, we have been very fortunate because there is a small population and we've been behind the national average of cases.
Mm-hmm.
We've been able to keep our office open.
Right.
Because there's only two of us, first off, and we have plenty of space to be. And we have protocols set in motion for that. But it was really important because our community was so displaced, to have a live person answer the phone each day.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I bet it was hugely important, yeah.
Yeah, and also to handle any outreach, that needed, because St. Vincent Paul, both for the diocese as well as our local, had been working from home, so... this was a live number that somebody can call and say, I need help. And then we can contact based on their need.
Yeah, St. Vincent de Paul, they set up in Chico as well, didn't they?
They have an office in Chico, and they're setting one up in Gridley.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to obtain the funding to hire on more case managers, which is really what was needed. There was always plenty of money to distribute. There was just not enough people to handle the caseloads.
It sounds almost like what's going on with unemployment right now.
Yes.
Where the money has been granted, and yet they're just overwhelmed, and nobody can, you know, it's really hard for people to apply, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah. So what has been, in this whole last year and a half, what has been the toughest part of your job?
Being innovative,
mm-hmm.
our folks, our parishioners, and even the people on the ridge, they look for us for guidance. They look for us for, is it going to be okay? Can I just talk to you about my problem?
Right.
And so, the whole thing about what is our next step? So we have a lot of things going against us, but the hope that I try to give them is that we have a good plan. We have to just stay focused on that plan and find innovative ways to implement the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we're doing, we had set in motion for after Easter, which we've had to put on hold, is this going out two by two into the community and greeting our neighbors and just to offer them a gift, let them know who we are. We're thankful that they've rebuilt or they've moved to the area or stayed and are, the pioneers.
Right.
And and try to break down some of the barrier that perhaps that had been perceived or understood as a barrier between us.
Is there commerce now in Paradise?
Very little. Most of the buildings are boarded up or are marked for lease. But the mechanic shops are operating, the coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
The grocery store. We have two grocery stores.
Mm-hmm. And they're open?
They're open. They've been open. Mm-hmm. They made the investment, the pharmacies, that investment to stay open. It is costing them to be open. That's what it takes to rebuild a town is the investment of the institution as well as the people.
Sure. Will the town ever be near the population? It was, what, 25, 30,000 prior?
Correct. You know, it'll take a long time for that to happen.
Uh-huh.
But we were below the poverty line in many cases.
Right.
We had a lot of wealthy people here, but it was mostly people that were just on real fixed incomes or below the poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
And because we had a very high outreach before the fire, we had a pantry program that fed 150 people a week.
Wow.
We had a hot lunch program that was operating 100 people each week that we would take turns with the various parishes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we knew that was, and the question is whether we have more people that have money that come here or those that are below the poverty line once again.
So was those people that were not retired but were employed, were most of them commuters to Chico and other places, or were there a lot of jobs within Paradise?
They were mostly commuters. Mm-hmm. They were either worked in Chico, Sacramento, as far as south of Sacramento.
Wow. That's a ride.
That is a ride. the line of traffic down 99 was immense.
Yeah.
I would say that our biggest employer was the hospital. It was mm-hmm. partially damaged, but the hospital chose to just close down.
Right.
So that was major damage to the schools, but more importantly, it's the displacement of students.
Sure.
So most of them are down in Chico or beyond,
mm-hmm.
and so they you have the unemployment of teachers and support staff.
Right.
Things of that nature.
Right.
So there, as far as jobs in Paradise, they're almost non-existent.
Mm. Yeah, that makes it a lot tougher for people to come back if there's no work to do.
Correct.
Yeah. Wow. And then the pandemic, it slowed, well, it probably did more than slow things down.
Right, it did slow. It slowed things down as far as the rebuilding effort, as far as the reason for people to come back to Paradise and start their projects, or restart their business, things of that nature. So and some of these businesses just won't be coming back.
Right.
So I think the other thing that we, as a parish, what we look at is economically. What fallout's going to happen? Obviously, people living on their investments,
mm-hmm.
That's gone down. People that that potentially will move here for work or whatever, that's gone down. So definitely, the money that we would normally be receiving is going to be lower.
So, do people look at this as a one-time event that just happened, or do you see that area now, your town, as being vulnerable to this?
Well, there's first off, there's a lot less fuel to burn.
Yeah, that's for sure, isn't it?
So, we always live in a threatened area, and that is most of California lives in a threatened area.
Right.
So it's the nature of our state, but. Hopefully that the powers that be come up with some plan to mitigate some of that. We definitely have done that here on our premises. We took out probably 47 trees
mm-hmm.
on the property
mm-hmm.
that the town wouldn't let us take out before.
Yeah, you've got my memory of Paradise was a lot of beautiful pine trees.
Yes. Yes, it was a beautiful area, and there was a lot of political battles over whether you could take trees down or not. And
yeah.
I can remember the time when we did the remodel in 2008, and I had scheduled something like 20 trees to remove. They let me take out 18. That was the max. So their own policies is what kind of allow this to happen. So our own complacency all the way around needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the pandemic has proven that as well.
Yeah, indeed.
That we are vulnerable.
Indeed. Yeah, it came out of nowhere. I mean, I'm talking to my kids, and they said, "Dad, you know, if somebody told you that, you know, we wouldn't be in school, there'd be no Little League baseball, there'd be no Major League baseball, the theaters would be closed, we couldn't even go to Mass, what would you have said happened?" You know, and what, a nuclear war? I don't know. Certainly wouldn't have thought a pandemic.
Yes. But, you know, it's interesting because our, in our population, we've always experienced the flu season, and you know, we have an elderly community.
Right.
You know, the average age of our community is 65 and older.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we weather through flu season, and... the thing is that we also, in hindsight, we looked back at some of our policy procedures and said, you know, we probably shouldn't have been doing it that way. We should have done it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is an awareness, and awareness, and you know, coming up with a plan, taking it head on, it's empowering versus being a victim.
Yeah. So how has your job as a parish steward changed?
Well, it's I've had to learn to be pastoral, versus just doing it my way. That was probably the biggest challenge for me. When I'm working with the physical aspect of the church and things like that, the nuts and bolts of the finances and things like that, it's pretty straightforward, but now, you know, you have to deal with people's feelings, you have to deal with people's fear, their struggles, and so you spend more time with folks, talking to them, and help them see the vision, and that's been my biggest challenge.
Hmm. And what percent of your parishioners do you feel, have moved on to someplace else? And you obviously... Some of your parishioners, unfortunately, must have died in the fire.
Well, we lost three parishioners to the fire,
mm-hmm.
Directly to the fire. We lost another 20 after through complicated conditions.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of sped up, their demise.
Right.
So we've had a lot of funerals.
Yeah.
And that. And some of our old the anchors of the parish,
mm-hmm.
And so now that puts new responsibility to the younger people to, when I say younger, 60, 65 or older,
yeah.
to step up and take that mantle of responsibility, which has been great because I have a full parish council. Of 11 people. I have a full finance council of 5 people. So we have some good minds working,
mm-hmm.
on the problem. And so it's not something I carry by myself.
Are there newcomers to the parish? Have new people come into Paradise?
Actually, we have. It is small. I mean, by comparison, but we would see two or three new faces, and we had a population of 733 families,
mm-hmm.
And now we have 150 people that come to Mass, so we have probably a parishioners probably about 90-95 families,
mm-hmm.
And it's easy to figure out when somebody's new.
Yeah.
And it is about rebuilding. It is about being here for the folks that did survive, their homes did survive the fire. It's for those who are rebuilding,
mm-hmm.
New people coming back. These are all these folks are important to us.
And I know it was a tight-knit community before. It must be incredibly tight-knit now.
It is. The people are more aware of each other's presence. And, the grocery store is the place to congregate to, mm-hmm. to talk and things of that nature and find out how each other are doing. One thing we implemented early on was for our parishioners to call each other, talk mm-hmm. to each other, not just email or assume they're okay, but to talk it out. And because it is extremely frustrating not to be able to have part of the mass of the Eucharist. We've gone online with the, as most parishes have, mm-hmm. with the streaming mass.
Yeah, the streaming mass. I think about when I was a kid. Much into adulthood, that wouldn't have been possible, And it's been glorious, if you will. It has been really at times with our family an emotional experience that we couldn't go to. I remember Easter Sunday and having tears in my eyes as one of our teenagers managed to figure out the technology to get it so we could watch it. Mom and Dad were hopeless, but
right.
And there was our pastor, Father Ray, at St. James in Davis, and there he was, and yeah. I just teared up. I thought, this is the first Easter Sunday in my life I haven't been in the church, and mm-hmm. and yet it's as I tell my daughter, one of my daughters who's a senior in high school. Yeah, you didn't have prom, you didn't have grad night, you're not going to be in the football stadium getting your diploma, but you're going to have stories to tell. You have a more memorable senior year than anybody in the family or anybody out there, and I felt that way on Easter Sunday. This was perhaps the most meaningful and emotional Easter Sunday I'd ever experienced. And I think what it really told me was, I always heard when I was a kid, my dad would always say, our church is universal. You can go anywhere in the world and mass is mass. And it always stuck with me. And I felt, even watching it on our TV remotely, that just resonated with me, that God's in charge, that Jesus promised us a church would always be here. And that nothing is going to defeat the church, even a pandemic. And by golly, those words ring true.
Exactly. It kind of brings new meaning to catching a mass.
That's right. It does, doesn't it?
It was interesting because I too reflected a little bit, actually quite a bit on that, is that because it took a little bit getting used to this,
sure.
this whole, because I'm 63, and to embrace this technology and I remember because I celebrated Mass with Bishop Soto on Holy Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Good Friday, I celebrated with Father Martin for St. Thomas More. And then on an Easter Vigil with Father Mike Newman at St. John's.
Mm-hmm. In Chico.
And, yeah. So, and then every once in a while, I'll sprinkle in Bishop Barron to just get some wisdom throughout the week with daily Mass and for Sunday Mass, and so it does give you a new insight to just how rich our church is, because these are great minds that are able to articulate our faith and in a very rational way. So
yeah, and really got up and running just like right now.
We all became televangelists overnight.
Overnight, yeah.
But they're also reaching a greater audience. I was just talking to a parishioner that because our mass is on Facebook as well, and she has folks that are not Catholic that tune in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. I saw Father the other day on for mass. I said. And it was interesting to hear their comments, because these are not Catholics. They don't go to church. And so we are affecting people.
Yep.
And that's where you have to always look at the grace. In any tragedy, that's something we learn from the fire.
Yeah.
That as the circle of grief got larger, the circle of grace of God was greater.
Wow, That is so well put. Just our 15-year-old son, after Easter Mass was over, he looks at us and he says, "I miss going to Mass." You know,
yeah, but
that's music to a parent's ears.
Exactly. So, you know, for our youngster, I think that's something we have to help them kind of unwrap,
mm-hmm.
and unravel that mystery, that these are important things. So it's important for parents to talk to their kids about that, to ask them what their feelings are about not going to Mass, those type of things, you know,
yep.
in the traditional sense,
yep.
not receiving the Eucharist. Because I think at homes we can foster the faith. We've always been able to foster the faith stronger at homes than anywhere else.
Right.
But this gives them talking points to really, really get into the reality.
Yeah, and you know, it's the notion of a parish has become even more meaningful to me. You know, there are a lot of things we just sort of take for granted. You know, the school's there, the church is there, father's there, you know, they're all the different ministries and all these. You forget how many people are involved in all that that make up this parish, this community. And we just kind of park our car and show up at Mass and expect it all to happen.
Right. And that was something, early on for us in the fire, the way I would express to our community, it was never about just coming back to Mass,
mm-hmm.
having Mass in paradise. You know, our responsibility is to the greater rich. And so it is to help folks see the presence of Christ.
Yeah.
And so it isn't about coffee and donuts. It's not about, you know, the lumber sale. It's not about the, you know, my agenda versus your agenda. It's you know, there's only one agenda, and that's Christ himself.
Indeed.
And so, you know, if you help people come along and see a greater picture, and when you remove all the trappings, it's easy to do.
Yeah, it's
and that's there too. That's a grace that we learned from the fire, that everything was taken away from us. So you just, it's really plain to see what is important, what is not.
Boy, you're so right about everything was taken away from you all at once. It sounds like it's a little bit like the pandemic, where it just, I know one day, two of our daughters were on a track team and another one was on the volleyball. Our son was on the volleyball team and right in the middle of the season, it was like they came home from practice one day and the next day there was no school. The next day it was just like boom, boom, boom. It was so sudden. It was so, everything was just ended, you know, no
Correct.
School, no anything. And it was just, all these things that you take for granted that they were just gone, you know, and you keep thinking, oh, this is going to be there. No, that's not there either. You know, whether it's, great things that you just going on a walk in the park or things that you don't look forward to, like going to the dentist, they're all gone.
Yeah. Right. Well, but it's also important, you know, I reflect a lot about our fire and applying it to our current state. And obviously, you know what our grief is. You're kind of experiencing what that grief is like.
Mm-hmm.
And but at the same token, even in our grief, I try to emphasize, we're not refugees. We're not victims. We're in exile.
Mm-hmm.
This will pass. This time will is a moment, but it's what we do with this, how we approach it. We must embrace that grief and not let it hurt us, and let it be something that empowers us to find our way, to find where, and just be quiet and listen to God's message.
Yeah.
We're not the first people to go through it. We won't be the last. You know, we have a rich tradition of people struggling through very, very hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it through it.
Yeah, amen. Yeah, it's I keep telling my kids every morning, you know, like, how are we going to get through this day? And you know, it might not be fun, but I say, you know, your worst fear here is boredom. You know, you're not cold, you're not too hot, you're not starving. You know, yeah, you can't go be with your friends and you can't do all these things, but you're well, you're healthy, you're taking the right steps, and you know,
you're being responsible. Yes,
being responsible. But remember, every day, remember God's in charge, and let's see what we can do to fulfill His will. What, you know, like, let's be still, let's be quiet, let's listen. And let's see what God has, because this is the day the Lord has made, you know. And you always you say that when the sun's coming up and you're looking forward to some great thing that you're going to do that day. Well, this day is also the day the Lord has made, you know. And let us rejoice and be glad in it.
Yes, and that I couldn't say more to that. But it just, for, you know, I one of the things I looked at was the. During the fire, I had this vision, this plan, and I can only attribute that to God's grace. He filled me each day. He talked to me each day and said, "This is what you need to do." And he would fill my brain with these ideas.
Yep.
And so I was, and that's my nature. I'm a very task-oriented person. I need to be, you know, always in motion. With the pandemic, all of a sudden, there was nothing I could do.
Yeah,
there was no answer.
Yeah,
and it was interesting because I also noticed that in my prayer life, God was silent, and He was telling me, "Greg, you don't need to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to make things happen. Just enjoy that grace. Enjoy that peace." You know, the amount of peace I feel is immense right now. I can't explain that. And that's unusual for me because it's not my nature.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make things happen. And so, there again, to embrace the things that God gives you. Don't push it away. Don't fight it. Don't be mad or upset over it. Because it's for a reason. You know, there's a lesson to be learned. And sometimes being quiet, you'll hear the truth. And in the silence, and so as we approach Pentecost, it was something that I, you know, kind of shared with my group.
Yeah, you know, I've got Pentecost circled on the map, on the calendar. I'm like, I'm waiting for the Holy Spirit. I think that might be a day of a real turning point.
Yeah, yeah. It is hard for some folks. They're you know, I know people that are mad at God. They're mad that this is happening to them. And but you have to just take a step back in because that word me, this is happening to me. But this is happening to a large group of people. And it is something that is, you know, we're going through it. We can't deny that it's happening. And rather than fighting it, just you know, not give into it, but at the same token, listen to what God is saying to you in this time. And the hard part for a lot of folks is to let go and hear, because they want to either be in charge or they want to know what the next thing is going to happen, that anxiety is high, those type of things, or they're just mad. And you got to let all those emotions go and just be still and be with God.
Yeah, so well said. So well said. Well, Greg, if they limit it to 25 and I come knocking on the door and there's only 24 in there, I hope you'll let me in and sit in the back row.
Well, you know, if you came knocking at the door, I'd probably find a 26 spot for you just outside the door. But I have a contingency plan for that as well.
Very good. Yeah. I'll bring my own hand sanitizer.
That's okay.
And a tape measure to keep the 6 feet away from people.
Yeah. Well, we got ushers to take care of that.
I'll bet you do.
I have a strong arm. They'll make sure that you stay in your place.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Well,
but you're welcome any time. Like I say, when the doors are open, we're here. And anytime you want to stop up. You're more than welcome.
Oh, thank you. I look forward to meeting you in person. Thanks for taking so much time with us this morning, and thanks for all you do up there. I know it's been invaluable to St. Thomas More and all the parishioners there. So God bless your work. God bless your ministry and our prayers. And I know our prayers of our listeners go to you and everybody there in paradise. That.
And thank you very much, and to you and your family and all of your staff that put this the radio program on, getting that word out. So we do appreciate that. And after all, it's we're all in the cloud right now, communicating. So our Lord's been doing that in the cloud for years. So
that's
anyway,
right.
We'll just be at peace and. We'll see you on the other side of this.
Very good. Greg, I look forward to seeing you soon.
All right. God bless you, and take care now.
God bless you, too. That's a Greg Kidder, who is the parish steward at St. Thomas More Church in Paradise. And what an ordeal they have been through in the last year and a half, and then starting to rebuild, and then the pandemic hits and shut everything down once again. That's going to do it for us for today. Yeah, our prayers go to them and all of our prayers. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
To the cross I look, and to the cross I cling. Of its suffering I do drink, of its work I do sing. On it my Savior, both bruised and crushed, showed that God is love, is just crucified.